the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hi there, how are you all? Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast, which is brought to you by Kraken. And today I've got an interview with Stepan Snigarev, a quantum physicist, to discuss the quantum threat to Bitcoin. But before that, I've got a message from my show sponsors. So first up, Kraken, the best exchange in the world for buying and selling digital assets, the only regulated spot and futures crypto exchange, and the only place I use to buy and sell Bitcoin. And it's the exchange I trust more than any. And not just because they're a sponsor, I've had a long-term relationship with Jesse. I've got to know him over the last year, and I've been really super impressed with the deep focus they have on security, including when they created Kraken Security Labs, which is their dedication to improving security across the whole industry. With all the exchange hacks that are happening, who are you going to put your trust in? For me, it is Kraken. And next time I'm out in the States, I'm going to be meeting up with Nick Pococo, Kraken's Chief Security Officer, where we are going to be discussing all aspects of crypto security. So join me in supporting Kraken, the best crypto exchange in the world, by heading over to kraken.com, which is K-R-A-K-E-N.com. That is kraken.com, which is K-R-A-K-E-N.com. And next up, the mighty BlockFi, the company which is creating the future of Bitcoin financial services. And currently they've got two products available. They've got their crypto-backed loans and crypto interest accounts, and they also just made a new announcement. They're going to be supporting the Gemini stablecoin across the platform. For BlockFi interest accounts, at launch, you will be eligible for up to 6.2% API, paid monthly with a minimum balance of 2,500 GUSD. Balances above 100,000 GUSD will earn a tiered rate of 1.5% APY. BlockFi also offer GUSD as a USD loan funding option and as collateral from institutional crypto borrowers. BlockFi's USD loan rates start as low as 4.5%, and this is definitely something I'm planning to check out. I just need to find a couple of days. I'm going to be using it for surplus business accounts to earn a better rate of interest than I get from my current business account. So super excited to try that out, and I will obviously let you know how it goes. If you're interested in trying out any of BlockFi's products, I do recommend you do your own research and then head over to BlockFi.com, which is BlockFi.com. That is BlockFi.com, which is BlockFi.com. Okay, so on to my interview with Stepan. And this one, it was a really interesting one for me for a couple of reasons. So firstly, I am a secret science geek. I love watching documentaries about space. And I'm also a subscriber to the Ask a Spaceman podcast, which I definitely recommend you checking out. I also read a bunch of science geeky magazines when I'm getting flights over to America. So I've read a whole bunch about the quantum world, and it totally boggles my mind. But secondly, I've also read plenty of times about this incoming quantum threat to Bitcoin. So when I was at the Lightning Hack Day in Munich, I was asked whether I wanted to interview a quantum physicist. Daniel came and tapped me on the shoulder, introduced me to Stepan, and I was like, yeah, definitely want to do this. So within a couple of hours, we were recording. So there was no chance to prep. This is just one of those interviews that was done off the cuff. So it's kind of a fun one. I hope you enjoy it. Bitcoin and quantum computing are arguably two of the trickiest topics to get your head around. And combining the two definitely pushes the limits. But is it a threat? Should we be concerned? And there's probably nobody more qualified to discuss this than Stepan. He is a quantum physicist, but he is currently working on a hardware wallet for Bitcoin, so he understands both of them. In this conversation, we talk about everything from mining to private key hacking and even aliens. So I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. And you know, if you've got any questions about it, you can reach out to me. And just a couple of notes, if you listen to this on the release day, then tomorrow I will be emceeing the Crypto Compare Digital Asset Summit in London. This is your last chance to get tickets to the event, which features a great lineup of speakers, including Andreas Antonopoulos, Tom Lee, Melton Demures, and Gabor Gabax of VanEck. With the code WBD, you can get a 20% discount, and attendees can register at summit.cryptocompare.com, and they do accept payment in BTC and ETH. Next month, I'm going to be emceeing the Bitcoin 29 conference alongside the amazing Naomi Brockwell in San Francisco. I'm going to tell you more about that soon. And also, I've just announced that on July the 3rd, I will be launching my new show, The Defiance Podcast. This is going to be a sister podcast to What Bitcoin Did, focusing on topics such as censorship, human rights, sex workers, the drugs war, but also Bitcoin. The Bitcoin shows here will be a little bit softer and a bit more generic to give those who've got a broad interest in Bitcoin or topics which kind of touch Bitcoin a more softer understanding of what Bitcoin is. So keep an eye out for that. And listen, if you enjoy everything I do, if you want to support the podcast, there's so many things you can do. Even leaving me a review on iTunes is super helpful. If you want to find out what you can do, head over to whatbitcoindid.com and click on the support section. And if you've got any questions, feel free to reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Right, so normally when I prepare for an interview, I usually spend about a day on it because I like to be really prepared. And then when Daniel just popped over to me now and he said, do you want to interview a physicist? I was like, yep, that's no problem. I've got a lot of experience in this. I know all about this. So yeah, should be good to go.
Yeah, sure. And you can ask me anything you want about quantum mechanics.
Okay, I don't really know a lot. As I said to you, I read a lot of science magazines. So I read this one called Focus specifically, which is quite a light science magazine, but very interesting. But it's always talking about the weird quantum world or the world of quantum mechanics. So I want you to start telling me about this weird world of, like, because I hear about these things like you've got a particle here. If it turns, another particle somewhere else turns, right?
Yeah, so it sounds like magic, actually. And basically, even quantum physicists say that no one really understands quantum physics. So, I mean, it's completely different nature and it's very hard to digest. So what we have to do is to build some mathematical model and then to project it somehow to our everyday life to get some rough understanding. But it's pretty tricky, yeah.
Didn't Einstein say something about quantum, like it's magic or something?
Yeah, he was saying a lot about quantum stuff, so he really didn't even like the theory that everything is a wave and a particle at the same time, and he was saying something about spooky action at the distance. So he didn't like the fact that if you are changing something in one place, then something accidentally changes on another place. But he was like one of the founding fathers of quantum mechanics, and back then it was even more weird than now, because now we can already live with it for decades.
Right, okay. So I'm going to want to break it down to the absolute basics. But before that, can you tell me your personal journey to ending up being a quantum physicist?
Yeah, I worked in experimental quantum physics until November last year. So basically my whole life. So first I went to the university, Moscow Institute of Physics and Technology, and there worked kind of starting from just physics in general, more to quantum physics, quantum optics, and then build a few apps, mostly working with quantum simulators and quantum computing. Now I moved to Bitcoin completely because fundamental physics is hard, and especially if you want to see the results of your work. Because basically what I felt like, okay, you're building the lab for 5 years, then you're measuring a few things, you publish a paper that maybe someday someone will use to do something awesome, but who knows if you will be alive at that time. So I just was missing this instant application of my research to the real world.
Right, okay. So let's break it down. What is the history of quantum mechanics and quantum physics? Who first discovered it or made us the hypothesis that it exists? Where did this all start?
So it started in the beginning of the 20th century. So Einstein and a few other guys were thinking about how the atom works, because then, according to classical mechanics, electrons shouldn't rotate around, kind of circulate around the nucleus all the time. So it should emit energy and it should eventually fall onto the atom, kind of the atom will collapse. So there was a problem, and the classical physics didn't have an explanation. So they had to invent some basic things to postulate a few things that they don't understand that would explain this, and then build the rest on top of that. So basically we have a few postulates, so like basic principles of quantum mechanics, and everything else is built on top. For example, the one of them is that anything can be both a wave and a particle, and it depends mostly on the velocity or on the speed or on the What does it depend on, actually? On the mass as well, yeah, on the energy. How far on this scale is the particle? Either it is more like a ball, a solid ball, or it is more like a wave. And the funny thing is that you can move them around on this axis. So basically, you, in some experiments, you can take electron and think that it is just a ball. And in another one, it will behave as a wave. Yeah.
All right. Let's break it down even deeper. Okay. Let's start with an atom. What is an atom?
Okay. An atom, well, it's not like the simplest thing. People back then thought that there is nothing smaller than that.
Yeah,
but
then
in
they
principle,
like broke it open and all this shit came out, right?
Then we have, so basically what we have in the atom is just a bunch of nothing. And in the very center, we have heavy particles like protons and neutrons. And around that, we have electrons that are rotating around the nucleus. If you go even deeper, then you can break apart the proton and the neutron to quarks. And then maybe you can go even deeper, but it is already not about quantum physics. It is more like a nuclear physics.
Right. Okay. So what is a quark?
Quark? Oh...
We go really deep.
Yeah, it is already really deep. So I normally didn't go that deep.
All right. So we've got the atom and we've got it. We've got electrons.
Electrons rotating around it. Yeah.
Okay. And like in my mind, I've read magazines and I've seen the graphics. I'm like, okay, so there's a thing with these things rotating around it. And there's like a gap between them.
Yeah, gap of nothing.
A gap of nothing, but it still rotates.
The electron is rotating around the nucleus, yeah. And the next thing what quantum physics actually introduced is that, okay, there is a certain quantization. So the electron cannot rotate at arbitrary places. So it cannot rotate like a planet around the sun.
Okay.
It rotates according to a certain rules on the certain trajectories. And so when the electron wants to move from one trajectory to another, they do it like instantly in one hop, and they emit a photon or they absorb a photon. So basically this means that everything is kind of discrete in there.
Right. So do you ever go far back and study the birth of the universe, the explosions that made it happen, and why these atoms exist? Do you ever go that deep?
No, not really.
Not really, because these are the basic rules of physics, right?
Yeah, so what happened during the Big Bang, no one really knows.
But it created these basic rules of physics.
I mean, our basic rules of physics should be able to explain the Big Bang.
Yeah.
So we can't explain everything. In particular, we can't explain why the Big Bang happened and why all this whole thing started, because it's just too far in the past, and we have we don't have enough data to reconstruct what happened there.
But at the start of the universe, we have the Big Bang. Everything that's created at that point, are they all atoms?
Yeah, everything was more or less not even atoms, more like plasma. So when we don't have just protons and neutrons and the electrons around it, but they are all messed up. So we have a bunch of these elementary particles flying around in a very hot plasma and starting expanding. And then they started shaping the atoms. Then we have reactions that created other elements of the Mendeleev table. The chemical table, and so on.
So the atoms, are all the atoms different depending on which element it is?
They are different in the number of protons, neutrons, and electrons, yeah. So if you have the same number of protons, it is the same element, but different isotopes. So basically atoms with different mass, but with the same, let's say, label. And if they have different number of electrons, then it's basically atoms or ions, depending on the total charge of this system.
Okay, so say I had some helium, say I had some hydrogen. What is the difference between the atoms of the two?
Hydrogen has just one proton, helium has two protons. Number of neutrons can be different. In hydrogen, it's none, really. In helium, there can be one or two. If you go above that, the whole atom becomes unstable and it can just radioactively break down into hydrogen atoms or just particles.
Right. Is this where we talk about the elements near the end of the periodic table having like a short half-life?
Yeah. So as soon as you have more and more this elementary particles inside, it becomes more unstable. And in principle, if you plot them, they are more or less go on the line. So like you add a little bit more protons, you need to compensate this instability by adding more neutrons. And so it's on average equal number of protons and neutrons.
Okay. So can you build an atom based on what
Well, basically, the atoms that are at the end of the periodic table, they were built artificially. So many of them do not exist in nature. So what people did, they just took two atoms somewhere before that and just shooted them to each other with a huge energy.
Right, okay. So could you just artificially create gold?
Well, it will be much more expensive than the gold itself.
Right.
But in principle, you can.
You can. Okay, okay. Right, and am I right in thinking at the birth of the universe, it was really just a bunch of helium and hydrogen, and they came together to build like the first stars when the clouds migrated together?
And yes, and then in the stars you have a certain pressure and conditions that kind of melted together hydrogen and helium atoms, and then we have lithium and all other elements in the periodic table. Yep. They were all born in the stars, so we are also all born in the stars.
Yeah, so that I'm going to come to, and then the star ends up dying, we have like a supernova, and that's when a whole bunch of other crap is created, right? Like all the other elements. Is that right? Or is everything already created in the star itself?
Can't say for sure. I think that normally they're created in the stars themselves. I don't really know what happens when the supernova and the other explosions happens. Yeah, it would be interesting to find out.
This is such an exciting interview for me because I read so much of this stuff. I watch everything I can watch on the documentary channels when I'm at home. And I also listen to a podcast called Ask a Spaceman. Do you know Ask a Spaceman? Paul Sutter.
No,
so he talks about all this stuff.
So you can actually tell me more.
I can tell you more. Yeah. So I can teach a quantum physicist a little bit about how the universe works.
Yeah, like astrophysics. So it's a different field. You know, just like in Bitcoin, we have people that are specified on more like Lightning and networking stack and more like on the cryptography. In physics, it is even worse. I mean, that if you work in quantum physics with particular applications, then you probably know much less about even also quantum physics, but superconducting circuits and these kind of things.
Well, all I know is, somebody said to me before, like you said, we're all made of stars, right? And I was like, yeah. What? And then I read about it, that basically when there's a supernova, the death of a star, it's such the explosion creates a whole bunch of new elements like that didn't exist and blasts across the universe. And, you know, that's essentially what we are. We are made up of all the elements that come from
stars. Then probably this dust from the supernova, from a bunch of elements, formed the planets, and then we start having life in there and Bitcoin as well.
So do you think the universe is going to come to some, like to a contraction, or do you think we're going to have this big, expanded, cold, dead space once all the stars have burnt out?
I doubt that we will see it. I mean, we will be probably dead by that time. But I would say that it keeps expanding with the speed of light. Maybe, I don't know, I think that there were some studies that it kind of slows down. Because, well, it makes sense. We still have forces that are kind of trying to slow down the expansion. I would say that, yeah, there will be a bunch of empty space and probably our sky will be a little bit more empty. So we will not be able to see the stars because they will be too far away. Yeah, that's, I think, how it will happen. But I can't say for sure.
You know, one of the weird things I think about, because I think about a lot of weird things with this, but I think about, like, we have our universe here that's created in this random nowhere space. Just we have this universe. I wonder if other universes have just exploded into existence in other just dimensions or weird spaces that we just don't know about.
And then when our universe will expand enough such that it collides with another one that is out there, maybe something interesting will happen.
Yeah, or they just, you know, this universe was created in somewhere. Like it exists. But not in a pinpointed place. And this is where my head starts to get all fucked up because I'm like, what's going on?
Trying to think. I would deeply. Say if it happened once, in case of our universe, it can possibly happen another time somewhere else.
Yeah. Do you believe in aliens?
If it happened once.
Yeah, then there you go. I thought you'd say that. All right, so let's talk about quantum mechanics and quantum physics. Again, let's go to the start. Can you just break down exactly what the theory is?
Okay. So maybe
It's a tough question, right?
I'm just thinking how to explain it in a pretty easy and understandable way. Okay, so the main building block is basically an energy. And the energy potential, such a thing that, well, basically how the energy changes in space or changing other parameters. And the fundamental thing is that everything can be pretty much, well, we have quants as well. So we have a certain, I didn't talk about quantum physics for quite some time, and now I'm losing my vocabulary.
The pressure's on. You can go back to the universe if you want.
No. I want to go to the quantum physics. It's much more interesting. So basically what we have a certain rules, like uncertainty principle, that defines kind of quantum mechanics in general. For example, the one is that if we have two things that are somehow connected, for example, the position and the momentum of a particle, so then there is certain uncertainty how we can measure one thing and how we will influence another one. So basically this means that we cannot know for sure your position and your speed. So if you know that you are completely at rest, your speed is zero, then probably your position is undefined within a certain range. And the same happens other way around. So if I know that you are exactly here, then I probably don't really know what is your velocity, what is your speed. There is one of the fundamental principles. And it is pretty easy to understand, because how do I know that you're at a certain point? I need to measure that somehow. And to measure that, I need to influence you. And when I influence you, I probably change your momentum as well. So basically, if I just take the ruler and hit you with a ruler, so I probably will provide a certain force that will change your momentum. So there is a way to somehow correlate this basic fundamental quantum principles to real world, but it's not very strict, I would say. Then another thing is about this energy levels in the atom, that it is another fundamental principle that basically if we describe everything in the crazy mathematical equations form, then there are certain boundaries and limitations for the whole thing. And what we will find out from that is that electron in the atom can be only on certain levels, only on certain kind of places. And it comes from math, but then you look at it in reality and you see exactly the same. So you start thinking that, okay, probably our theory is more or less correct. Because, yeah, we have an experiment that confirms that. All the basic principles of quantum mechanics are built like this. So we first invent some convenient mathematical model and then we verify it. So there is no kind of complete truth. So I am expecting that maybe in 200 years, there will be another theory that will say that all the quantum mechanics is crap. And actually there is we need to develop much deeper and much more complicated mathematical apparatus. But up to now, it works.
So quantum mechanics is just a mathematical theory?
Basically, yes. Yeah, and we have also a bunch of experiments that confirm it, and a few that don't.
But when they talk about having a particle here, which is a pair, because particles have a pair, right?
Why?
So when I read about you have a particle here, and you can turn it, and another random particle somewhere else will turn.
Okay, that is already a little bit different. It is so let me tell you about the qubits.
Yes. Yeah.
So comparing to normal bits that can be either 0 or 1, we can have a quantum bits, like bits on steroids, that can be anything from 0 to 1. And the thing is that if they're somewhere there between 0 to 1, when you measure it, it still be either 0 or 1. But when you're measuring it, every time when you're measuring it, it will be slightly different. So there is a probability. And what you can do with two qubits, you can entangle them. So you can make them in such a quantum state that they kind of feel each other. So basically, when one is 0, the other one will always go to 1. So this means that even if two qubits are somewhere between 0 and 1, and you're measuring the same qubit over and over, and you get randomly 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1, and so on, when you look at the second one, it will always collapse to another one. So this is the quantum entanglement. It is a pretty hard-to-digest kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm struggling right now. So I've always gone via what I've read is that
And the way people explain it in the simple science magazines is there's a particle here and there can be another particle at the other end of the universe and they're entangled.
Yeah.
But that is true. They can be.
It can be, yeah. And in total, I would say that our whole universe, it is based on quantum mechanics, and we have a bunch of quantum superpositions everywhere. So basically, everything is entangled. So maybe we are living in just one probability of all possible universes. So maybe our universe is in this weird entangled state, and we just...
The multiverse.
Multiverse, yeah.
I've read about the multiverse.
And so it doesn't mean that there is no other alternative universe where we are not talking.
Yeah, and there's another one where I'm the quantum physicist and you're the podcaster and you're talking to me, right?
Yes. The problem with that is that all this quantum mechanics stuff is really working only on the tiny scales.
Right.
So as soon as you have all this entropy, well, you can either think that, okay, if you're breaking this entanglement and measuring the probability and you get 0 and 1, you actually collapse it, or you can think that at this moment of the measurement, your universe splits, and in one of these universes, you measured 1, and another one, you measured 0.
But what connects them?
Nothing.
Magic.
Well, nothing, it just splits, so it's already the question of how do you identify yourself in this whole thing? I mean, it's really philosophical questions.
Yeah, and you can end up just like wrapping your head into a kind of big confused state and getting totally lost in it all. I love it though.
Next up, I talked to Stepan more about the quantum threat to Bitcoin, but before that, I got a message from my show sponsors. So my new sponsor, Accointing, they've been on the show a couple of weeks now. Have you checked them out? Are you taking your tax seriously with your crypto holdings? If you are, or if you're not, you definitely need to check them out, as they are not only a crypto tax tool, they've got one of the best portfolio management solutions available. Also, it is the best priced crypto tax tool available, and you only pay when you want to get your tax report. So definitely go and check it out. I've been playing with the tool, and I have to commend them. They have taken something very complicated and made it super easy, taking out all the complexities of tax reporting from the user. You will see this when you go and play with the tool. I highly recommend you check it out for yourself, as you do not want to get yourself in a tax pickle. And it doesn't just calculate your tax. It optimizes your trading decisions to ensure that you trade the right coins to reduce your tax burden. You can also import your data from all major exchanges and wallet providers. It is really comprehensive, so a total no-brainer. Go and check it out at accointing.com, which is accointing.com. That is accointing.com, which is accointing.com. And last, but definitely no means least this week, is Dropbit, the best Bitcoin wallet I've used. They sponsored my event at Consensus, and they are sponsoring another event for me at Bitcoin 2019 in San Francisco. So really looking forward to that. But have you downloaded it yet? Have you checked it out? As I said, since I've been using it, it's changed how I use Bitcoin. I didn't really used to use a mobile wallet. I used to do everything from my hardware wallet. But now when I travel, I load up a few sats on my Dropbit Bitcoin wallet. And I use that when I'm away. I use that after I have to give people Bitcoin or if I have to receive Bitcoin. It is the simplest mobile wallet available, and it really acts. It's just like a Venmo for Bitcoin, which is not something we have here, but out in the States, I've seen my friends using Venmo. Just a very easy way to send Bitcoin back and forth, and you can even text it to your friends. Yes, you can put in their phone number and actually text them Bitcoin. So come on, go and check it out. It's the best UX Bitcoin wallet available. It's available for iPhone and Android. Just head over to dropbit.app, which is dropbit.app. That is dropbit.app, which is dropbit.app. So how does it apply to computing when people talk about quantum computers?
Oh, that's actually really awesome. So imagine you have a certain problem. Let's say you have a bunch of, balls, and you need to find the one that is the largest one. Squares or whatever. So how the classical computer does it. So he just measures each of them, compares the numbers, and then gives you the largest one. This means that during this procedure. It basically did a lot of useless computations by measuring each of them. I don't care about which of them, what size is each of the squares. I only need the largest one. So what quantum computer does, basically it can just skip all these preparation steps and just by applying a few gates into all of them, get the answer right away. Mostly because of this entanglement thing. So basically, if you can encode your question in the qubits and then slightly change the probabilities of these qubits, what you can end up with is that you apply the separations and at the very end you measure and you get the answer. And this, in principle, gives you, very good improvements in the algorithms.
Right, okay. So that sounds doable, sounds perfectly feasible. How come it's taken so long for a quantum computer to be built and we're still not there, right?
Yeah, we are not there yet. I mean, right now, all the quantum computers that we have, they can be easily simulated on a normal computer. So we are just crossing the boundary when we will have the system that cannot be simulated by normal computers. The problem is that all this entanglement thing is very fragile. So as soon as you accidentally hit a photon in this system or make some other annoying measurement failure, you ruin the whole thing. So, and keeping, like, you need to first have multiple qubits, and each of them is very fragile, and then you need to entangle them, and this process is very fragile, and then you need to apply gates to them, that is also very fragile, plus you need error correction codes, because sometimes they just fall apart. This means that for some reasonable computing, you need a huge amount of qubits, and tremendous amount of gates of these operations to perform normally. So the current state, I can tell you the current state of quantum computers. You know, that's what people scared about is like factorization of the product of two prime numbers, right? So this is basically what RSA is built on top, that if I give you a product of two large prime numbers, there is no way for you to brute force what other prime numbers really are. And there is an efficient quantum algorithm that can do it. So what quantum computers can do now, they can factorize, let's say, number 15 into 5 and 3, this level. So maybe you can go a little bit more and have like maybe 7, 8, 9, 10 bit numbers, but not like 2048 numbers that we use in RSA right now. As soon as you want to scale it more and more, it becomes more and more complicated. So we have like maybe hundreds of qubits, thousands of gates, and we need orders of magnitude more.
Okay. Don't Google have a quantum computer that they are talking about that's making good progress with?
So there are a few things. So the first one is what they had before. They were partnering with the D-Wave company. They built what they claimed to be a quantum computer. There are still questions if it really uses any quantumness in their algorithms, but they are very specifically targeted to certain tasks. In particular for Google, what is interesting is training neural networks. And training neural networks is basically solving the linear, a huge number of linear equations. These quantum annealers are not like a general purpose quantum computers where you can implement anything, but it's more like ASICs, right? So ASICs can do hashing. Google's quantum computer can do annealing, but you can't ask ASIC to calculate to run some arbitrary program there. So it's just not exactly the quantum computer. It's quantum, it's computing something, but
it's not the dream.
We call it more like a quantum simulator, so let's say, or very application-specific quantum computers.
So I've heard various estimates. Some people say we may be a decade away from a stable quantum computer. I've heard somebody say we may be 30 years away, and I've also heard somebody say it'll probably never be achieved. Where do you fit in this kind of world?
We see breakthroughs in the field every, let's say, 5-10 years.
Okay.
And this is basically the time that you need to build a web. So when you have a nice idea, you just build it, and then you, if you're lucky, it works. So right now, everyone in quantum field is worried about scaling. Well, scaling quantum computers.
That's what we've got in Bitcoin.
Yeah. And there are right now several different implementations that are successful in one of the directions, but I don't see good ideas that would put all of that together. Imagine if there will be a way to build a quantum computer, so there will be a roadmap. Let's say it will appear, like the ideas will appear in 10 years. Then you still need another 5 years to build a prototype. Then you need a lot, you need to work much more on making it more or less robust. And then let's say in 20 years we have a quantum computer that can do something useful. But then you need another decade to scale it such that it overperforms classical computers and starts breaking classical cryptography.
So decades away is a realistic estimate?
Decades away, yeah. I would say two at least, more like three, four or something like that.
And that would probably be the classical supercomputer type quantum computer that sits in IBM or in Google. It's not going to be the computer you or I have.
Yeah, it will be a lab. So it will be a laboratory lab. Yeah. So basically, I can tell you what our kind of setup looks like. So it's two rooms with three optical tables. One is full of optical components. Another one is full of vacuum system. We have like five students constantly running and keeping it running and somehow doing something. And yeah, in total, it takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of space, resources, and qualified people to build these things.
How much of this is engineering and how much is maths?
In experimental physics, like 90% is engineering. So while I was working there, I mean, I had some theoretical challenges from time to time, but mostly it was just programming, developing different devices, writing software, mechanical engineering, all this kind of stuff. In principle, if someone like Google or some national government agency will really put some funds in that, it can be parallelized, it can be made much faster. So I know that there is one lab that is working with Google on Ion quantum computer. So they're doing pretty well, pretty good progress, but still in the kind of early stages.
Okay. So there are different kind of views on what would happen when we have a stable quantum computer. There will be obviously benefits, but there will obviously be kind of some quite scary negatives. So how do you look at the pros and cons of quantum computing?
So just the threat of quantum computers allows us to develop new crypto, and this is awesome. I mean that basically we need to invent more robust and secure cryptography. It is awesome, but we shouldn't rush there. Because right now what all the challenges showed that if there is a new quantum secure scheme, there's probably something wrong with them in implementation, and it can be broken by the classical computers. And this is terrible. So I think that just the threat of quantum computers is pushing the field forward. And hopefully we will get quantum secure crypto. And then I think that there will be only benefits. And from the Bitcoin perspective, well, we just need to do hopefully soft fork, at the worst case hard fork, and then we are good.
Oh, so the only danger, and I'm thinking broad here, just to society and the world in general, the only danger from quantum computing is the ability to crack cryptography in any field, not just Bitcoin.
Yeah, so quantum computing can crack modern cryptography, so we just need to develop a new one. And I mean, if you look into the past, I don't know, 20 years ago, no one was using SSL, no one was using HTTPS, right? And everyone was kind of okay with sending plain text over the internet.
Yeah.
So now we are a little bit better in that. So I think that at the moment when the quantum computers will come, we will already migrate to the next generation of crypto.
Can quantum computing drive forward AI?
Yes.
It can.
Yes, so that is why Google is working on that. Right. Because the hardest part in neural networks is how to train them. And this training and finding the minimum in this thing is really a pain, so it can take a lot of time. And if you can parallelize it and if you can use quantum computer for that, that would be really a boost of artificial intelligence.
What's the Google? Is it DeepMind?
No, DeepMind is working just on architecture of neural networks.
Okay.
I don't know exactly what is... So I just know the web that is working with Google's support, but I don't know if they have like a website or anything.
So they're essentially creating synthetic neural networks.
No. So the neural network still works on the classical computer.
Yeah.
The only thing that quantum computers help with is how to train them.
Oh, how to train them.
Yeah, right. So okay. Just the training happens with the quantum computer, and then as soon as the neural network is deployed, it can perfectly analyze the images and distinguish cats and dogs.
So, okay, so quantum computing, the benefit is much higher computation. I guess there would be many fields it can be applicable to. So I guess maybe healthcare, like analyzing results.
Healthcare, energy industry. So, for example, one of the applications of quantum simulators and computers is we need to invent the high-temperature superconductor. And right now it is really a problem because you just need to make another alloy and test it. And with quantum systems, you can actually simulate it. And you can see what exactly you need to do to make a high-temperature superconductor. And then what will mean, all the wires everywhere will be with zero resistance. And this means that no energy losses, and we have cheap energy for mining, maybe.
So what was your interest in Bitcoin then? What brought you into Bitcoin?
I like math, in principle. I like cryptography. And also, Bitcoin saved my life savings when the Russian ruble crashed by a factor of two.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd say that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, great story.
I just kind of was looking into Bitcoin. I liked the technology. I thought that, okay, it is very promising. I bought basically Bitcoins for all the money that I had. I was a poor scientist, so not much. But and then after in a few months, Russian ruble just crashed by a factor of two and everyone lost their money and I was fine.
So what's the position on Bitcoin in Russia? Is it legal? Is it illegal? Because it seems like it's still unsure.
It is in the gray area. So officially it is legal. But if you are trying to run a business somehow related to Bitcoin, there is a chance that people will come and make your life harder. So normally people try to avoid crypto, and this is basically the position of the government as well.
Wasn't the government at one point talking about creating their own crypto?
It was not exactly the government, it was the central bank.
Yeah.
And it is slightly different, and the guy who was trying to do it, he got fired.
All right, so with Bitcoin, obviously we have cryptography. The current cryptography, SHA-256...
So this is the hashing algorithm, yep. SHA-256.
So the fear is that quantum computing would be able to crack that quite simply. And if somebody secretly...
So the thing is that, there are two different security assumptions in Bitcoin. The first one, we are relying on the hash function, this is SHA-256. And the second one is our elliptic curve signing algorithm that's relies on the discrete log problem. So there are two different quantum algorithms that helps there. So the one that kind of breaks SHA-256 is not very efficient. So if you think about the complexity, to brute force the correct hash, you need to try 2 to the n numbers, right? So you just brute force them, maybe a little bit more efficient, but roughly that.
How big a number is that then? What are we talking about here?
Numbers, 256 bits. So basically it's like huge numbers. That is how mining works, right? You know, so we with mining, with all the power in the mining, we can only have a few leading zeros in the box. Yeah. And quantum computer will do it a little bit faster. So it will be not 2 to the power of 256, but 2 to the power of square root of 256. So,
well, could a miner point all their ASICs at trying to hack a specific wallet?
It's just extremely hard. I mean, that what exactly to hack? I mean, our so for signing, we are using a different scheme, the elliptic curves, right?
Yep.
And the only thing that you could possibly do with SHA-256 is just to try to find the data that hashes to exactly certain number, but it is much more profitable to mine new blocks instead. And I think that as soon as we get quantum computers, the first thing that they will be applied to is to mine new blocks a bit faster than ASICs.
Right, okay, so you believe quantum computing will be used for mining before it be used for hacking?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Interesting. Okay.
Because there you can you can help yourself a little bit, and in principle the algorithm is a bit easier. For the hacking the public-private key, it is much faster, but also I don't think that at that moment we will still use our elliptic curve signing algorithm, so we will move to something else that is quantum secure. And hashing can stay. So
has any work been done into what could come after elliptic curve, which would be quantum resistant?
So there are a few directions in the field. I'm not very familiar with it. I've heard of something like lattice-based cryptography and some other stuff. So I should probably look into that. And right now I feel that it is still like at the early stages. So yeah, as I said, there were competitions where quantum secure algorithms were submitted and then they all got hacked. But there are directions. So I think another problem is that you can't proof that the certain algorithm is quantum resistant. So you can guess, you can say that, okay, it is resistant to existing quantum algorithms, but there are also smart people developing new quantum algorithms, and who knows, maybe they will find out something that breaks also kind of quantum resistant cryptography. So it will be more like a cat and mouse play. So I think that it will be just a constant race, but it's good to have some kind of competition, and it just pushes the technology forward.
So what kind of work are you doing yourself in Bitcoin?
Right now we are building a hardware platform, so basically something like a hardware wallet, but also developer-friendly and basically a platform such that you can take it, you can develop something on top of that, you can extend it and make a hardware wallet of your choice. So if you are not happy with the security assumptions that we did, you can introduce your own authentication mechanism or something. So it is both the hardware wallet and developer boards as well.
When you say we, is it a team, a company?
So we have a company, a startup. So there are three co-founders, and we have a few engineers, and also we have access to a pretty nice security company in Germany and a hardware company that has access to the factory. So basically we have like right partners and three guys that are on top of that. And yeah, we are currently raising funds.
You're currently raising. How much how much you're raising? Can you say?
So we to get the wallet quickly on the market, we need to raise something like $5 million.
Okay.
Talking to VCs right now may take some time.
So you'll just be a competitor to Ledger and Trezor?
So our hope is not to be directly a competitor, to do something slightly different. So ideally to still be friends, at least with Trezor. At least with Trezor. And I think that we are on the right track there. We are working together with them on CoinJoin and stuff.
Oh, okay. So you can partner with them.
So on the protocol development, we want to partner with Trezor, yes. We want to make a different hardware, so Trezor guys are fully open source, and that is why they use an application microcontroller. We want to take a secure element into the thing, but we still open source everything that we develop. And later, maybe at later stages, when we start developing our own secure element that will be open source, and maybe Trezor will be able to help us with that.
Is your product going to be more for experienced kind of expert Bitcoiners, or will it be for someone like I would use?
So I would say that it will focus more on modern Bitcoin developments, but still it will be user-friendly. So our main goal is screw all these altcoins and instead focus on what is happening in Bitcoin, in particular Lightning integration, CoinJoin integration, hopefully sidechains, and Schnorr signatures as soon as we get them. So like really to provide a tool to store your keys or whatever application you are trying to use.
So this is going to be the hardware wallet for the Maximus, no shit coins at all?
I mean, as we are open source and we also open, give certain access to the developers to the microcontroller, the altcoiners can build the application or the module for their stuff, but we just don't want to allocate resources to that.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
So just because there are too many things happening in Bitcoin, so we don't have time to focus on other stuff.
Right. So when do you hope to have a product in market?
Hopefully in 1 year after we are done with fundraising. So it just takes around 6 months to develop a secure chip. We are using a custom one. And also all the testing stuff takes a while. We want to test it with hopefully Wallet Fail guys and other hackers. And a year, unfortunately. But we are planning to release the developer kind of this developer tools earlier. So as soon as we are ready for that, so hopefully in autumn. So the developer board and the secure element that has a Bitcoin functionality in it.
Right. So if someone's listening to this and they want to find out more or even invest, where should they go to?
They should probably contact me or my other partners. So I think that... Can we put my Twitter handle somewhere?
Yeah, I mean, you can say it now, so people hear it, and I'll put it out as well.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. Stepan Snigirov. first name, last name.
Yeah, don't need to spell that out.
Also,
have you got a name for the product?
That's a tricky part. We kind of think about something like Voltu, like Volts with, this HODL and BIDL stuff.
Like PODL.
but I'm not sure yet. So right now I'm more focused to make the prototypes work.
Right, okay. So I don't think people will get your Twitter from what you just said because it's a complicated Russian name. So I will share it in the show notes and put it out there.
Okay.
Make sure they hear about that. Anything else you want to tell anyone about before we finish up?
Well, about the quantum stuff, I think that there is nothing to be scared about right now, at the moment at least. So maybe in 10 years, I mean, come on, Bitcoin is just 10 years old, right?
Yeah.
So in another 10 years old, 10 years, who knows how we will develop all the crypto and stuff. So.
Yeah, but what if it was like some secret Chinese laboratory and they're like years ahead? And they figured it out and they think, right, we're going to fuck with Bitcoin. We're just going to go and absolutely smash all the private keys open. We're going to go steal everyone's Bitcoin.
I'm a little bit skeptical about that because, the research and fundamental science is also open, like Bitcoin. So what if I would tell you that, okay, there is a certain Chinese Bitcoin that is ways ahead of our Bitcoin that we don't know about, and they are using all that fancy crypto in there? Do you think it is?
Well, it isn't Bitcoin.
It isn't Bitcoin, in the fundamental physics field also there are plenty of conferences and sharing the knowledge and so on, and I think that the community driven is the fastest way to get to the final point. So if there is some secret lab somewhere, they don't share their thoughts, they don't have any feedback, and they will be stuck at certain points. So I don't think that there will be any web that is more than, well, let's say, a couple years ahead of the community in general.
And as you said, there's enough paranoia in the Bitcoin community that people are already considering this, right? So almost certainly we will see changes before a quantum computer becomes available.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it will happen before quantum computer will be available, because it's much easier to deal with math than with all this experimental quantum unstable stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like between the protocol and the implementation, there is a huge gap.
All right, man. Well, Stepan, this was fascinating. Loved finding out about it. Definitely interesting. I think people will really enjoy hearing about this. So I really appreciate you coming on at an hour's notice.
And thank you for inviting me. I was very glad to talk about quantum stuff.
Okay, so what did you think of that? I've got to say that was one of my favorites I've recorded. I think Stepan is great. And although we veered off from quantum physics and touched on astrophysics, it was great to have him on. But what do you think? Are your keys safe from quantum computing labs around the world? I think for now it appears that there is a kind of little threat now, but it is something that I'm glad some smart people are considering and preparing for.
And it's kind of interesting to think about this quantum stuff, right? I mean, it's funny to think that in an alternate reality, in an alternate universe, that Bitcoin is back over 20K. But also, there might be an alternate universe where Bitcoin has never existed. So I think that's kind of interesting, kind of weird, totally boggles my mind. But if you enjoyed the show and you've got any feedback, feel free to reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. And if you want to support the show, there's always a bunch of things you can do. Firstly, just listen to the ads. I know some people find the ads annoying. I've seen people complaining. If you don't want to listen to them, just skip them. It takes you like 10 seconds to do it. But it's the sponsors that pay for me to do this. So if you want to support the show, please do check them out. If you don't want the ads, you can subscribe to an ad-free version. Just head over to patreon.com/whatbitcoindid for $5 a month. You can get the show without ads. And if you don't want to use Patreon, you can subscribe by crypto. Just drop me an email on hello@whatbitcoindid.com. I'll give you a deposit address and then I'll add you to the distribution list. I'm also accepting Lightning payments. Give me a shout if you want to use that. You can become a show sponsor. I'll be honest, pretty much all my ads are sold out for the year, but I've got my new show coming. So if you're interested in sponsoring that, feel free to reach out to me. You can leave me a review on iTunes, or you can click on the subscribe button and you can follow me on social media. You can check out my website, whatbitcoindid.com, and you can share this show out with your friends and family. Anyway, many, many more interviews in the bag. And tomorrow I'm going to be meeting up with Jeremy Welch from Casa. We're going to be discussing the threat to the agtech world of Bitcoin and privacy, something that I've written about and something I find super interesting. I'm going to try and rush that one out on Friday because I think it's going to be a great show. And remember, if you want to reach out to me, my email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com.